It is 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and in just a couple days at this time, QAnon comes to primetime on Sunday Night Football. Also, Baker Mayfield, his career is in doubt. Can the great Sean McVay salvage it? And how big of a loss is Von Miller to the Super Bowl hopeful Buffalo Bills? All that and more with my great friend, Trey Wingo, Pro Football Network senior NFL analyst. Trey, you're on the best coast while I am on the beast coast. How's it going over there?
Good. Technically not on a coast at the moment, just in Pacific Standard Time. We're actually in the high desert here in Vegas, as you can see by the opulent surroundings behind me. Had to come out here and do some work for Caesars. Very excited about that. But it's actually chilly. It's going to be about, it's going to be in the low in the high 30s and the, the high in just the mid 50s for the next couple of days. But something's going on.
That's interesting. Those are not temperatures that I would have predicted. By the way, Trey, as you are very quick to jump on me and make fun of me when I say ridiculous things, I just got a text from my wife. She's watching the show live, and I said Beast Coast, and I immediately got ridiculed for that. So,
well, listen, she's wrong. I mean, it's the East Coast can be a little unbearable this time of year.
For sure.
Well, my camera just gets super dark, or is that just me?
No, you look good to me.
Okay.
Right. No, you look good.
Technical people, let me know.
Yeah, right. We're good.
Might be the bad thing. You can see me.
Oh, no. Not that handsome face. So, week 14, Trey. A lot has gone on just in the short couple of days that week 14 has been live for us. Let's get into our first segment, Time to Learn. And, again, we are finishing up our round of believe, doubt, or need to see more. Let's start with that primetime matchup, Trey. The Chargers losing a tough one to the Las Vegas Raiders. They're not out of it. Have they done enough in your mind to have belief still? Do you have doubt now, or do you still need more?
I have doubt because the Chargers are the Chargers. I mean, let's just be honest about it. You know, all they needed to do was either tie or win that game last year, week 18, rather. And, you know, they didn't get it done. I like a lot about the Chargers. I love their GM, Tom Telesco. I love Austin Eckler. I love Justin Herbert. I love the idea of Keenan Allen and Mike Williams when they're healthy. They just can't get out of their own way. This is not anything new. You know, that, there's a reason the word chargering exists, okay? And their home fans know it. I mean, I'm sorry. The few people that happen to straggle into a Chargers home game that profess some sort of loyalty to the club that is the home team.
I knew exactly where you were going with that, by the way.
I was about to say the Chargers fan base is also an oxymoronic statement, I think. So, listen, I think they have given us enough over the years to doubt until they prove otherwise.
Yeah.
Do it. Get there. Make something happen. Then we'll believe you. Until then, I have to doubt you.
Yeah, losing to the Raiders, you know, again, the AFC West isn't what we anticipated it to be at the start of the season, for sure. But even the Chargers losing to the Raiders, who are currently sitting just above the bottom because the Denver Broncos are.
Raiders are interesting. Just going to throw that out there. We'll get to them in a little bit later, I'm assuming. The Raiders are interesting.
Yeah, but before we get to them, because they are going to have a major say in what goes on in this AFC playoff picture, the other team I'm interested about is who the Chargers are going to be playing on Sunday Night Football. And that's the Miami Dolphins. This game against the San Francisco 49ers that they played in week 13 was supposed to be a prove it game, supposed to be a show me game. And Jimmy Garoppolo goes out early. Brock Purdy comes in. The Dolphins lose. The Dolphins lose, Trey. Do you believe in them? Do you doubt them? Or now do we need to see even more after that game?
I think we need to see more. And it has nothing to do with Tua, and it has nothing to do with that offense. We talked about this the last couple of weeks on this program, right? What a different team the Dolphins defense is on the road.
Yes.
How about this? Let me just throw this out here. Whenever they travel, they bring their defense because there is no D that they bring with them. Okay. They are the 21st team in NFL history to allow at least 27 points in six straight road games in a season. 27 points in six straight road games. Yeah. By the way, they gave up 27 points in six straight road games to a San Francisco 49er team quarterbacked by Brock Purdy. And listen, if Brock Purdy, pretty good. And if Brock Purdy turns out to be the next Kurt Warner or Tony Romo, hey, tip of the cap.
Sure.
But I'm going to need to see a lot more to go down that rabbit hole.
For sure.
And the Dolphins defense is just nowhere near as good on the road than it is at home. And we saw that time and time again. And I need to see more, because unless they get this thing turned around right now, I mean, the biggest winner last week was the team that didn't play on Sunday. It was the Buffalo Bills.
Yeah.
They entered Sunday as the 5 seed in the AFC. But thanks to the Chiefs' loss to the Bengals, which we will talk about, and the Dolphins' loss to the Niners, which we are talking about, they went from the 5 seed to the 1 seed, and Miami is now the 5 seed. So, you know, there's still a lot left to play. All these teams in the AFC are going to play each other, except for the Chiefs, who have the easiest road left in the regular season based on wins and losses of their opponents. So this thing is going to be is far from done. But right now, Buffalo was the big winner. And Miami, there are question marks. Prove to me that you can be the team at home defensively that you are at home. Because right now, as it stands, you don't get a home playoff game.
And yeah.
You're going to have to figure the bleep out of where you're going to be.
What a stark difference from a year ago or even 2 years ago, Trey, or even really the last decade, where the defense was the thing in Miami that kept them in the season. And now that they've got the offense figured out, here we are asking those questions. What's hilarious is when you said they have the defense on the road because they dropped the D. No BS. I submitted an article that's going to get published tomorrow looking at the Tua and Herbert matchup. And I said that exact sentence. So we mind melded right there.
There you go. But like both of these teams, like for example, right now the Chargers are 3-point home underdogs to Miami.
Yeah.
Since they moved to LA, whether it was at the soccer stadium or SoFi where they are now, they are 2-7 straight up and 4-5 against the spread as home dogs. So they're not real good at being a home dog. The Dolphins aren't good at all defensively on being a road team. So something's got to give in this matchup on Sunday night, and I'm not sure what it is.
Yeah, we'll have to see. it'll be interesting. But look, we sat down with your good buddy, who's become a good friend of mine, Jeff Darlington, last year for our More Than Football podcast, and we talked to him about the Tuanon, right? Tuanon mob. This is their Super Bowl, Trey, right? Because it was all about, we could have had Herbert, or Herbert's not as good as Tua, and so on and so forth. This is the game. Do you see this game being a defining factor in how we view these two quarterbacks going forward?
Not even remotely.
Yeah.
I mean, look, you always like I don't think Patrick Mahomes stinks because they've lost 3 times to the Cincinnati Bengals.
Good point.
You know, yeah. So I listen, it's the second meeting between these two. By the way, at some point we need to take a hard look at the 2020 quarterback draft class. Mm-hmm. Joe Burrow, Tua Tagovailoa, Justin Herbert, and oh, by the way, Jalen Hurts in the second round.
Yeah, the forgotten quarterback in that class, right?
Forgotten quarterback in that draft class. And remember the Eagles fans were like, why are we taking this guy when we have Carson Wentz?
Yeah.
Now you know why you took him.
Yeah.
Now you know.
Oh, Carson Wentz.
Shivers.
Oof. And by the way, just a quick shout out to James Stratton, who's watching us on YouTube. Go Lions. Yeah, I know it's December, he says.
No, the Lions have a path.
No, they do.
The Lions have a path to the postseason. If they had figured out game management better against the Bills, I'd feel a little better about them.
But, and look, apparently we're becoming a hub for Lions fans, which is great. Bring them all in. But B. Olivier 23, who's watching us over on Twitch, says, how about my Lions last week with the flex? We got you. We got you, B. We see you.
Is that B. Olivier or Believer? I'm not sure. You probably are right with the French pronunciation, but I just wanted to throw out there the other opportunity.
Well, you know what? The Lions fans should be believers right now because, as you said, they do have a path. I want to talk about, as we go through the segment, one more team, right, to decide how we feel about it. That's the New England Patriots. The Patriots are a team that they're not out of it. They haven't done a single thing to make anybody believe that they can still be in it, but they're right there in the hunt, Trey. Do you believe in them, or do you have doubts still?
I have doubts, and I don't believe much in them because their path is they get to play everybody, but they can't beat anybody except the Jets. Right.
Well,
their path is they got to beat the Bills. They got to beat the Dolphins. I think they play the Bengals too, if I'm not mistaken. And they got to beat all these teams. And here are the numbers. That's a great how long do we look to find that photo of Bill Belichick?
That's a great one, right?
Segment? Like we look hard for that one.
Shout out give to the Pro Football Network graphics team right there.
Give me one, guys, where Bill looks like he's in pain about thinking how bad the offense is. That first picture was it. And when I say bad, they're bad. They're tied for DFL, and I think we all know what that means, in red zone efficiency. They're 28th in first downs. They're 25th in third downs. And they're averaging less than 21 points a game, which is tied for 20th. They don't have a single player on offense where you go, we got to stop that guy.
For real.
Not one. So when you have a defensive coordinator who looks at their offense and says, yeah, we can just play whatever and we think we'll be good with these guys, that's a problem. And Mac Jones is on the screen now. It's not Mac Jones' fault. Like, I don't think Mac Jones has regressed. I think the coaching staff and the players around him have regressed. Maybe. Call me crazy. Maybe it wasn't the best idea to replace Josh McDaniels' offensive prowess with Joe Judge and Matt Patricia.
I was going to ask.
Could be wrong. Might be wrong. Yeah. But I feel like that might be where the Patriots' secret sauce was left out in the sun too long in the back of a car.
Oh, Jesus. I wanted to ask you about that because, man, what an analogy. But I wanted to ask you about that because, you know, we saw in their last game Mac Jones get very visibly frustrated on the sideline.
Good. Like, good. I'm glad he did. He should be.
Well, and that's the thing, right? This is so much about they're having – it appears that the offense is – unprepared for who they're going to face and what they are prepared for, they're not executing. And that also falls on coaching. We think of execution, yeah. We say the players are not executing, but they're not executing, Trey. A lot of times that's because they're not being coached correctly. Would you agree with that?
Yeah. Look, here's the deal, okay? They're not going to change their scheme at this point. It doesn't do them any good. They don't have any playmakers or game breakers to change that scheme around anyway. The only way, the Patriots can find a way to win and claw themselves into the playoffs is to simply execute to perfection on offense and be an opportunistic defense. And their defense is really good. I mean, their defense is really good.
Yeah.
But they have no margin for error on the offensive side of the ball. They can't have turnovers. They can't have penalties. They can't have drops. They can't have blown assignments. They can't have, misreads. They have no margin for error. If they play close to perfect football offensively, they can win. Otherwise, they can't.
Yeah, it's pretty wild. And when you're walking on the razor's edge of the difference between success and failure, you know, you almost feel like, you know, they're a team that is going to make you play hard for 60 minutes, but you feel pretty good that you're going to come out on top when you play them. I don't see them being a contender, you know, certainly for the postseason this year, but we'll see. You said they play the Bengals. They still have the division teams. They may have a say in what the picture looks like.
They have the opportunity, but I don't think I've seen anything from them to believe that they will take advantage of the opportunity. I think that's the best way to say it. You know what I'm saying there?
100%. To this point, Trey, in the season, and when we do this time to learn segment, we focused on teams with believe, with doubt, with do we need to know more. But two things happened this week where I want to put the focus a bit on the players. And the first thing I want to talk about is Von Miller. Now revealed he has a torn ACL. He will be out for the season for the Buffalo Bills, who are a Super Bowl hopeful. And that defense, in large part, was successful because of Von Miller's added pass rushing prowess to it. He's gone for the season. Does this have any impact on how you view the Bills going forward? Is there less belief now in their ability to win a Super Bowl?
There's a couple of reasons why I have less belief in Buffalo is that they're not playing, first of all, as a team on the same level they were through the first 5-6 games of the year. That's not debatable. You look at the numbers, they're not playing the same way. You go look at the last two seasons, right? And you find out who made it to Super Bowl Sunday. Well, the COVID year of 2020, the Chiefs won 7 straight one score games and got home field advantage in the AFC. The Tampa Bay Bucks, or as some refer to them, the Buck of Brady's.
I'll live that at some point.
Were 7-5 after 12 games and then didn't lose again. Go look at last year. No one at this point, even at this point in the season, was talking about the Bengals or the Rams. The Rams, I think, had just gone through a 3-game losing streak since losing Robert Woods, and Odell hadn't really fit into the system yet. And the Bengals were just sort of hanging on. No one knew what the Bengals were. Both those teams got hot at the right time. And one of them may be getting hot at the right time again. So, yeah, I there's reason to have doubts in Buffalo. Look, Von Miller was their number one leader, not only in sacks, eight, but quarterback pressures in 36th. And I think he's top 10 in QB pressures on a limited snap count. Like Von Miller has not been, hey, Von Miller, go out there. We're, you know, you're starting and you're just going to stay on the field. That's not how they've used him. They've used him in situational pass rushing to be the difference maker, as he was in that October 26th game against the Chiefs at Arrowhead. It was his rush that led to Patrick Mahomes making the big mistake, that interception that sealed the 24-20 win. So I have concerns about Buffalo for three reasons. One, Von Miller's not there. Two, they're not playing with the same level of intensity and perfection. Intensity is a bad word. The same level of perfection that they were through the first five, 6 weeks of the season. Three, the Josh Allen thing is still sort of out there with the elbow, and I'm going to add in the running game.
Okay.
The running game, you know, still hasn't really been there all season. I mean, Josh Allen is their best runner. At some point, you say what you want about the Chiefs, but at least Pacheco and McKinnon give them a legitimate running game.
They figured it out as the season's gone on.
They figure that out as a running game. So, you know, Buffalo, they need Josh Allen to be superhero for them to win right now. They really do. And suddenly Davis, who couldn't miss from the beginning of the postseason last year to halfway through the season, is suddenly becoming the receiver that made him expendable in other places. Coming back down to earth a little bit. Look, Diggs is still great. Dawson Knox is wonderful. Isaiah McKenzie has gone through some struggles, but seems like he's a real contributor now. But Davis isn't the threat that he was 6 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago. There are concerns about Buffalo. I mean, look, they're still, in my opinion, worst case scenario at the top three team in the AFC. Sure, but they're not that, holy crap, look at the Bills. I mean, they're just not that right now.
Yeah. I mean,
They can be again, right? Because this is a very fluid situation. They can be again, but right now they're not clicking the way they were earlier.
And just to illustrate that, you know, Trey, you know, with my sports betting model, I put a ton of different data points in there. One of the things I track is points scored per minute of possession time and points given up. For the season, the Bills are averaging 0.5 points per minute given up to the opponent, you know, depending on how long they possess the ball. That gets them in the top five. But since the bye week, that number has increased by 92% of their season average. And that's only gotten worse as Von Miller has been out of the lineup. Well,
and Micah Hyde's out for the year.
And Micah Hyde, exactly. Yeah. So there's a lot of challenges that they're going to be facing, to your point, about they're not the same team they were at the beginning of the year. We'll see if we can get back there. There is one more player I want to talk about, and then we're going to bring in our good buddy Arif Hassan to come in and talk about some stuff going on around the league. But before we do, a big transaction happened. I guess we'll debate about how big that is, but Baker Mayfield was placed on waivers by the Carolina Panthers and subsequently claimed by Sean McVay and the Los Angeles Rams. This is the ultimate player that we can ask this question about. At this point in his career, Trey, do you still believe in Baker? Do you have doubts about him? Or do we need to get even more information in this newest opportunity for him?
I don't think we need any more information about Baker Mayfield. I think at this point we know what Baker Mayfield is and, more importantly, what he isn't. What he never should have been was the number one pick in the 2018 draft. I think that's pretty bleeping clear at this point. All right? That to me, if you're debating that position, then we should just say, hey, we agree to disagree.
Yeah.
I think it makes all the sense in the world for him to be picked up by the Rams because the Rams don't have a legitimate quarterback on their roster right now.
Yep.
Wolford is at best a journeyman potential backup and occasional emergency guy. Bryce Perkins has that possibility of being a legitimate stopgap quarterback or backup guy, but we need to see more to use the time to learn lingo here that we're talking about. And Stafford's out for the year.
Yeah.
So we need Baker, or the Rams need Baker. Now, the problem for Baker is that Cooper Kupp's out for the year, and Allen Robinson's on injured reserve, and they haven't had a running game all year. They've tried to work it with Cam Akers, and the defense has not been as good as it was last year, as witnessed by the touchdown that they gave up to Seattle in the waning seconds of that game. So Baker is who Baker is, right? He's healthy. When he's healthy, he can make every throw. He has a perfectly decent arm. There's enough sauce on there. Baker's issues are his physical issues. He's short and he's not fast. Okay. I've said that forever. Like the difference between Russell Wilson in Seattle and Baker Mayfield is that Russell is a little stockier and a little faster.
Yeah.
You go look at the 40 time between Baker and Russell, and that those tenths of seconds
are
the difference between a torn labrum on your non-throwing shoulder and really not missing many games in terms of Russell Wilson, despite thumb injury from a year ago. But that's the razor line we're talking about. When everything's on time and on schedule and Baker's not getting hit, he's a very functional quarterback. When things go sideways and the pressure comes a little more intensively, then Baker is going to be exposed for the things that he cannot control, which are his physical limitations. I'm happy for the Rams because they need a legitimate quarterback, and I'm happy for Baker to have an opportunity to play. But, Baker is who he is, and he's as good as the pieces around him. And right now the pieces around him in L.A. are not very good.
Yeah. Again, we mentioned my sports betting model before. I did just, I got a piece coming out tomorrow, guys. Every week I preview the Thursday night football game, and tomorrow night the Rams and the Raiders will face off on Thursday night football. And, Sean McVay, of course, left the door open ever so slightly that there's an outside chance that Baker plays in this game, tomorrow night. But the reality is, part of the things I highlighted, Trey, is the uncertainty that they have at the quarterback position. It makes sense that they took that they're taking this chance on Baker Mayfield. But to your point, I don't know how. I mean, let me ask you this. If there's a guy who can salvage Baker's career, is it Sean McVay?
Yeah, absolutely. Sean McVay, this is the worst season of his coaching career. And everything comes against the background. Well, hey, we went to two Super Bowls and won one of them, so most of them don't care. I mean, I've had a lot of people say, would you sign up for the Super Bowl that the Rams won, knowing that this would be the season afterwards? And I'm like, find me a franchise not named New England, Kansas City, or maybe just those two that wouldn't. Yeah. Wait a minute, you're going to tell me you're going to be in two Super Bowls in 4 years and you're going to win one of them? Hell yeah, I'd sign up for that. All this talk about the Packers, one appearance in the Aaron Rodgers era. They had two in the Brett Favre era, only one in the Aaron Rodgers era.
Which was over a decade ago.
Yeah, Super Bowl 45.
Yeah.
31-25, your final score, by the way. Only the second 31-25 score in NFL history. Both of them, weirdly, losses by the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Yeah, that was a great score Nami fact. Okay, and as I mentioned, guys, I do have a preview article with some strategies on how to bet on tomorrow night's Thursday night football game. I do have my Week 14 betting slate coming out, but you can only get it on Picket. Picket is our exclusive bet tracking partner. We give out awards for the best bet tracking apps, and we gave Picket our top slot why we agreed to partner with them. I use it. It's an essential tool if you want to be a sports bettor. As you know, I place all my bets at Caesar Sportsbook. I also play DFS Fantasy at Underdog, and I can sync both of those accounts to the Picket app, and you can track all of my bets across both of those apps throughout the entire season, and any of the bets that you're placing, you can track there as well. You can line shop, do an incredible amount of things. So make sure you go do that. It's a free app. Download it. Picket Sports. Download it for free. Enter code PFN365. We got a promo link in the comments. Make sure you click on that. And for downloading a free app, we'll also give you a chance to win $100. I mean, it doesn't get better than that. So go do that if you're into sports betting. And if you're not, you should be. And this is the app that's going to help you do it really, really well. Now, let's move on to segment two. Trey, this is where we examine an overarching problem going on in the NFL or amongst the NFL's players, coaches, executives, whatever that may be. And we bring in our good friend Arif Hassan, PFN's lead NFL analyst, to come in and have this conversation with us. Arif, earlier this week, you put out an article about five general managers that were on the hot seat. And then the NFL went and said, we see your five. But we're going to fire John Robinson anyway out of the blue. And I thought it highlighted, Arif, this incredible issue of the hard and challenges of being an NFL GM. And I'm actually going to kick it to Trey first, Arif. And the reason is this. One of the GMs that you had on your list is somebody that, you know, we've all gotten a chance to know a little bit, but it is a situation in Arizona that's a little challenging, and that's Steve Keim, and they're kind of trying to figure things out there. Trey, you are friends and know many of the NFL's general managers.
Right.
Speak to this issue on how difficult it is to be one in this league.
Yeah. Well, I mean, coaches and general managers in the NFL are in a really weird, but it's always good to talk to Arif. I'm glad he's joining us for this. And the article was great. Coaches and general managers have this weird sort of duality problem in the NFL. They have all of the power, but no control, which is the way to say they have the power to put together a team. They have the power to schematically come up with the things that we think are the best things for them to do. Yet they have absolutely no control over what happens on the field because the players decide it. So it's this weird sort of duality. Like, I get it, okay? But let's start with John Robinson, who is no longer the Tennessee Titans general manager. And by the way, Mike Vrabel had some interesting comments. Hey, we just got to move on, which means I was okay with it.
Go sign.
If we're being honest, I mean, like, he's like, well, you know, it stinks. It's personal. We got to move on. I'm all right with it. I understood that they didn't value A.J. Brown at a certain dollar amount. And they felt, okay, I think what they did in the draft in getting rid of A.J. Brown and drafting Treylon Burks, who I still think is going to be a really good wide receiver, and we've seen flashes of that in the last few games. He's come back from injury, and then he got the concussion again. And they felt, okay, we can get cheaper at wide receiver with Treylon Burks, and King Henry's still going to be King Henry. You know, he was great last year after he came back from the foot injury. We should be fine. And we're going to do these things and our defense will be okay. Well, Harold Landry goes down with a torn ACL. Derrick Henry looks washed completely at this point. I think over his last four games, he's never averaged more than 3.1 yards per carry, which is incredibly low. I think out of qualified running backs right now, he's 49th out of the top 50 quarterbacks in yards per rush before contact. I mean, it's really bad. Yeah. So all of these things made sense when John Robinson looked at the team in the offseason and said, if we do this, 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 we'll be fine. And none of them have worked. Not one of them. Okay. So that's the problem. You know, if you look at Steve Keim, who I got to be honest, is a friend of mine. We text, we talk all the time. And I just want to put that out there so people know, you know, that I'm not trying to hide anything. Yep. You look at Steve Keim, they made the playoffs last year. Okay. You know, we feel good about Kyler, kind of, with the contract and the clause.
Video so inside.
We decided to commit to Kyler. We brought in these other weapons, including Hollywood Brown, which I did not like that move. I mean, I would have much rather seen them go the Treylon Burks way and draft a wide receiver and then don't have to worry about paying him. And you're paying Marquise Hollywood Brown all this money. But, you know, it made sense with what everything was going on in the history that those two had. Just hasn't worked. Yeah. Like, some things can be the right move and not work and not work out. I have to believe, and Arif, I'd love to get your take on this. I have to believe there's more that we don't know about the firing of John Robinson, because the A.J. Brown thing has backfired completely. The drafting of Isaiah Wilson last year out of Georgia has been a little
story on that that I'll yeah, share in a minute. But
cool first round pick. And then there's the whole issue of what happened and how they disciplined their offensive coordinator after the DUI. So all of that has to roll into it. But I have to believe, even with all that being said and done, they're a first place team. They're going to win their division, barring the most ridiculous collapse that I can possibly imagine. And you just don't fire your general manager when you're a winning team and likely to win your division and get a home playoff game. So there had to be something more bubbling under the surface that we're not aware of.
Yeah, no, I absolutely think that that's the case. And I kind of reached out to some people to see if, you know, that was the case. And, you know, they had no idea, but they were also puzzled by the firing, which I think tells you that kind of league-wide there was kind of a confusion about how this had occurred. Because, you know, the reason that we were functionally given, right, was that it was because A.J. Brown went off against them, which is the most short-sighted thing I could possibly imagine. There's no way.
Well, it's not like owners don't make completely unrational decisions.
Yeah, well, okay? Especially, I mean, we know the history of the Titans, you know, going all the way back to the drafting of Vince Young, which neither the general manager nor the coach wanted, right?
VY is my guy.
Yeah. So, you know, it happens, right? It happens. But that is so short-sighted. It would be difficult to attract a general manager.
it would be Snyder-esque is the best way to say it.
Yeah, exactly.
Infamously, Dan Snyder once, when Mike Nolan was his defensive coordinator, said, "Hey, I really don't like vanilla defenses. Oh, I really need you to jazz it up." And then, of course, they played and they got beat up. And the next day, Mike Nolan went into his office and there was a melted carton of vanilla ice cream with a note from Dan Snyder that told you, "I don't like vanilla." Like, Dan Snyder knows the freaking difference between a vanilla defense and the 46 defense.
I'm surprised he actually found vanilla ice cream.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, I mean, if the story we were given was something about how, you know, hey, these draft picks are not working out, the most recent free agents didn't work out, you know, I would understand it a little bit more. Although, again, like you said, it was when I wrote this list, I was looking at, you know, which general managers were relatively safe, either because they had a really long tenure or a really short tenure, right? And I was looking at which general managers had, you know, a pretty bad team record around them. Like you said, difficult to figure that out because power, not control. But, you know, you take a look at the last 5 years or the course of their tenure, whichever, you know, comes first. Obviously the Titans didn't show up, right? when you take a look at that. That doesn't mean, you know, in some ways, the statement was put forth by Amy Adams Strunk, the way that they put it is, you know, you can always get better functionally is the way that, which is like fine, I guess, but it is.
As an overriding concept, yes.
Yeah, right. But it is just such a strange, again, it'd be difficult to attract a general manager if that's the actual reason, right? Right. You're saying we can make the playoffs multiple years in a row and I could still get fired? What am I doing here?
Well, Arif, the other thing that makes it interesting to me is that this is never the time where you would fire a general manager because there's
absolutely
nothing he can do. Trade deadline is gone. The team is the team. So the next important things for you are free agency and the draft. So if you're firing someone, if we're doing this logically, that has to be the overriding comment. If we're looking at this
let's not forget, Trey, that the Jets fired Mike Maccagnan right after he drafted the entire team, right?
So we're looking at this logically. There's no need to fire him until you get to the offseason.
Yeah.
Right?
Unless
there is something that is such a red flag and a red flashing light that we don't know about, or if there's someone that you want for the job that is available now. And I don't think they've even mentioned who they're going to think about. I mean, like, this guy's just brought in from in staff, right?
Yeah.
Just elevated from in staff.
No. Yeah. So, you can't throw out your scouting department, right? You need the scouting report. Like, they're not turning over, you know, the front office, right? So they're going to approach March with, you know, some plan at free agency. I imagine that a new general manager will have to come in February, maybe earlier, right? After Black Monday, but, we'll have to come in and institute a vision. But I think that there's some sense here, and you kind of referenced it. There's some sense here that, you know, maybe Mike Vrabel won a power struggle, right?
That would not surprise me at all. Would not surprise me at
all. So if that's the case, then the person they bring in will be Mike Vrabel's arm, essentially.
I'll tell you, a couple years ago, I was working with a player in the draft, and Mike Vrabel, with me present, adamantly told this player, "If you're there with our first round pick, we're going to take you." Adamantly told him, "If you're there with our first round pick, we're going to see." Now, they tell players that all the time.
I was about to say, that's a common refrain.
For sure. Yeah. Night of the draft, got a text, pick coming up. You're looking like you're going to be there. You know, we want to take you. They didn't take that player in the first round of the draft. Instead, they took Isaiah Wilson. Same position. What came up when the agent questioned was the scouting department liked the SEC pedigree. Now, you could tell direct disconnect between the way the coaching staff viewed the players and the way the general manager and his scouting staff approached roster construction. And we all know what happened with Isaiah Wilson, and I'll tell you that this player is now a starter on a contender. So point is that I think you guys are both hitting the nail on the head here. The only thing that makes a lot of sense and alluded to by Trey with Mike Vrabel seemingly were on, you know, Mike with Bill Belichick's were on to Cincinnati essentially. That there definitely could be some disconnect. What I do want to focus on too, Arif, just getting back to your piece for a second, because again, John Robinson wasn't in it because he hadn't been fired yet. But what I'm interested in is
yet.
The day after the piece published.
Yes, exactly.
You spoke it into existence, Arif.
The five general managers you did include. What I'm interested in is, what are the key things for each one that made you put them on their list? One of the things that Trey and I talked about, particular about one of the better general managers in the league, Brett Veach, is his ability to construct a roster and build a team. In terms of, we talked about, you lose Tyreek Hill, and yet the Chiefs have probably the best offense, you know, in terms of points and production that they've ever had.
Because he leads the league by 400 passing yards and has, right, what, five more touchdown passes than anybody, losing Tyreek Hill. That
because
just
there's a difference in building a team and acquiring talent. Those are two very different things. So, Arif, can you talk to that? And Trey, I would love to hear your opinion on these general managers as well as we go through.
Yeah, and I'll start with probably the most difficult one to put on the list, although I felt compelled to, which is Chris Ballard of the Indianapolis Colts, right? Super well-regarded both in media circles and in league circles. You know, people love him. And the important thing with a general manager, or I guess two important things, is that you need to have a strong understanding of what the team is supposed to look like. You have to have a vision, right, for what the team is supposed to look like. And you have to have the ability to execute that vision. The ability to execute that vision comes in a number of ways, right? One is, you know, making sure that you've got a great plan A in place, right? Making sure that you know exactly what your free agency is going to look like, you know exactly what your draft is going to look like. And then more importantly, making sure that you've got plans B through F, right? Because plan A is never going to happen. So you need to make sure that you're flexible, that you've got an understanding of how things are going to occur, and the ability to kind of deal with emergencies, right? Anthony Costanzo emergency, like a surprise retirement, right?
Right.
How are we going to deal with that, right? Those kinds of things. You know, when a surprise happens, you know, a player just got arrested, they're a star player, we're not going to have them for the rest of the season, or at least the next couple of games, depending on, you know.
Andrew Luck retiring.
Yeah, Andrew Luck, right? Great piece over at ESPN about that. It is important that you have flexibility, but importantly, within the capacity to execute a vision, right? Your flexibility cannot be to just acquire a player, like you said. And the problem with the Colts right now is that as problems appeared, they did not have methods of solving them. They were really timid about approaching clear and obvious holes in their roster. They were not very good about developing plans to deal with surprise injuries. Like they don't, like, you can't replace Shaquille Leonard, of course not, but you can find ways to put people on the roster that can replicate maybe 80% of what you need out of that, right? And they couldn't do that, right? And so, you know, there have been some issues at the draft. There have been some issues. They were basically, you know, sitting back in free agency. Like, everyone likes to talk about how, you know, the Packers, especially right before Gutekunst arrived, how the Packers, you know, were so relaxed in free agency. They never tried to plug holes in free agency. They always tried to build through the draft. Well, it's because they drafted well, right? Like, you don't need to do that then. But if you're not drafting well and you have clear holes in your roster, you can't count on a third round pick to be an immediate starter and solve a problem. You can hope for it. That'd be nice. Hey, Shaquille Leonard did it, right? But no. You need to be able to execute and envision. And I think that's the issue, is that the Colts had a number of holes pop up in the roster. Like, if we say, hey, not Ballard's fault that the four quarterbacks they got in four consecutive seasons didn't work out for them. Kind of a weird situation if that's the case, but let's say it's all Frank Reich. So there's problems all over the roster. And so that was kind of the issue there, is the ability to kind of execute on a vision. I mean, the Colts just have not been good for the past couple of years, and everyone loves Ballard. That's fine. But, you know, they make the playoffs with Phillip Rivers once. They kind of get close with Carson Wentz until a collapse late in the season. But for the most part, they just haven't been able to compete in a remarkably weak division.
Trey, you know that you and I have had private conversations, because there are players that I work with on the Colts about my opinions on the order. So I won't get into those specifically. But what I'll say is I have always found it very interesting that for a while, the Frank Reich, Chris Ballard connection garnered an incredible amount of love and positivity in terms of the narrative around them. Have you shared that as well? And what have you seen relative to what Arif is saying that makes sense that Ballard could be on the hot seat now with Jeff Saturday there?
Go look at the Jeff Saturday press conference hiring. Okay. Look at Jeff Saturday's body language. look at Jim Irsay's body language and look at Chris Ballard's body language. Mm. One of them looked like, hey, man, I'm excited about the opportunity. One of them looked like, I think this is a chance to hit a home run. And one of them looked like he'd just eaten bad cheese.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he got the dreaded vote of confidence.
Yeah.
At that press conference.
He did. He did.
So I had to put him on the list. I know how well regarded he is, but I had to put him on the list.
No, I think it's interesting, or even like I said, there, you know, I've had some insight to the organization that I want to get into specifically, but it's an organization that's obviously in flux. It's obviously not something that everyone doesn't know. Your first appearance on this show was to talk about, it was in the aftermath of the Jeff Saturday hiring. Jeff Saturday, friend of the show and friend of Trey's for sure. By the way, make sure you go listen to our Jeff Saturday More Than Football podcast. It is a great speaker. Yeah. He does have incredible mindset.
Holy hell, the Matt Ryan decision has just been awful. Like it was a bad call. Like,
but that goes to what Arif was just saying, though, right?
Awful.
A new quarterback every year. It's Carson Wentz. It's Jacoby Brissett. It's Matt Ryan, and it's just not working. Arif, just for the sake of time, I could talk about this all day. You've had an incredible list. To get the full list, make sure you go to profootballnetwork.com and check it out. But Arif, who would you say is on the hottest seat on your list? And we'll end it after that.
Yeah, for me, I think it's Steve Keim with the Cardinals. It is, first of all, that's another organization that I think just under the surface is bubbling, right? It's pretty unsettled. We know that Cliff Kingsbury's seat is definitely not safe as a head coach. We know that they had an incident in Mexico City where they had to send a coach home right away and fire him. Fire him and then send him home, right? And I think
that's how crazy the NFL is, by the way. I completely forgot about that because of how many things.
Yeah, there's so many these stories. Yeah.
That's why they win.
Yeah. And I think part of the reason that it happened so suddenly was to avoid a diplomatic incident. I think if that had happened locally, we may not have even heard about it, much less something that dramatic happening. But either way, there is a lot, it seems like, that's just happening. And like you said earlier, they bring in Marquise Brown. I understand the decision. It's not really a great fit, it seems like. But I mean, you say, hey, draft a receiver. Look at the receivers that he's drafted. I like Rondale Moore, but like that's where we're at, right?
Yeah, no, you're right. You're right. So, like they managed to convince Bill O'Brien to give them DeAndre Hopkins for gum and a tackling dummy. So
yeah.
But you're right. And look, I also got to preface this. I know Steve. I talked to Steve. I've known him since he was in the Steelers organization. He's a friend of mine. But yeah, like you decided to go hire Cliff Kingsbury, who had a losing record in college, because you wanted Kyler Murray.
Yeah. And
right now, neither one of those choices look like franchise builder.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, I think you can say, hey, that offensive line's injured. You can't take the protection issues against them, which is like, I don't think he did a terrible job building depth, but the depth is not great, right? But the defense is just a mess. You've got some players that you love to see, people like J.J. Watt, right? But this defense just does not have much of an identity, and I think it's because they got players who don't have much of an identity, right? You take a look at players like Buda Baker, who's good. You take a look at a player like Isaiah Simmons, who's not, right? You take a look at a player that might be, Zaven Wilson. And you take a look at a player that has left recently, Hassan Reddick. Those players didn't have positions. They just filled roles from down to down to down, which sounds great. Man, we can run an amoeba defense. We can be as aggressive as we want. We can use this linebacker to cover in the slot. We can use the safety to blitz. And that sounds great. But if your players are not good at most of the jobs you're asking them to perform, the defense is not going to be good. And
they might be the only defense that makes the Patriots offense look good.
Wow. Yeah, right. Exactly. It is a rough situation on the defense. I don't think any coordinator could salvage. I mean, it's always these tantalizing pieces and players with remarkable athleticism and not a ton of skills.
By the way, we did have a Cardinals fan jump into the arena here watching on YouTube. And this is a Trey. This is an OG of ours. Been with us since our first season of Draft Insiders. But they say, blow it all up. Bidwell needs to grow a pair. Apparently, in the fan base, there's unrest on this.
That's a whole nother discussion about ownership that we can get.
It is.
Trey, let me kick to you the final word on this before we get on to our final segment of the show here and bid our good friend Arif farewell. Do you agree that Keim is his seat is the hottest, or is there another GM that you think might have a hotter seat? And again, to be clear, Trey, you're always great about saying this. I'll say it for all of us. We are not advocating for people to lose their jobs.
Right.
We are simply reading the temperature in the room right now.
I think it's pretty hot for Steve. I would also say, unfortunately, it's probably hot for Tom Telesco. If they don't get it done, they have a franchise quarterback on a rookie contract. Right. They have franchise contract. They have one. I don't think anybody in the league doesn't look at Justin Herbert as not only a franchise quarterback, but a top five quarterback at worst in the NFL. And he's on a rookie contract. And, you know, they tried to see the Jackson thing and the Khalil Mack thing, and that hasn't really worked out. They have Eckler and they have Williams sometimes when he's healthy, and they have Keenan Allen sometimes when he's healthy. But, you know, I love Tom Telesco, and a friend of mine, you know, real good friend of mine.
Great Half Forgotten History episode, by the way.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I just think if we're being honest about it, if Brandon Staley falls short because of some of the way he decides to call the games, then, you know, that was Tom's call. So I think Steve and Tom are it's pretty warm.
I will say this. I'm not just saying this to gas you up, Trey, but very few people would be that candid regarding personal relationships that they have. I think that's actually much appreciated in a space where
I don't want it to be. Yeah, I don't want it to be the case
for sure.
I'm looking at it. If you're the Chargers and you have this gem that you have found,
that's the golden ticket, right? Quarterback on a rookie contract. That's
rookie contract. Yeah. Both of Patrick Mahomes is. Actually, the first one they redid the contract after they went after his Super Bowl MVP performance. But yeah. You got a golden ticket contract. That situation, you got to take advantage of it.
Yeah. All right. Well, Arif, as I said to everybody watching, to get the full list, to read the article and all of the other great content that you provide to Pro Football Network, go to profootballnetwork.com to check that all out. Arif, we'll see you next week. Same time. Can't wait to talk.
Absolutely. See you then.
Bye. And by the way, before we move on to our final segment here, I would like to say that we did talk about a bunch of teams, talked about a bunch of GMs. We talked about a lot of things that will have impact on team seasons. You can go and place a bet on all of those teams, all of their future. Still, will they make the playoffs? Will they win their division? Can they make the Super Bowl? All of that's available for you at Caesars Sportsbook. And here's why Caesars Sportsbook is the best place to go place those bets. If you place your first wager with them and you lose, you're going to get 100% of your stake back as a free bet. And that's not up to like $20 or $50. It's up to $1,250. You can bet $1,250 risk-free with Caesars Sportsbook. And win or lose, you're also going to get 1,000 reward credits and 1,000 tier credits, which are available to you only through Caesars Sportsbook. And it's very simple. Download the app, enter promo code PFNCZR. PFNCZR to take advantage of one of the best offers any sportsbook is offering, and that's only through Caesar Sportsbook. Trey, it is time for what has very rapidly become, not just mine, but the comments that come in for this segment are incredible. So let's get right to it. This is our Underdog Fantasy Super Smash Quarterback Matchup of the Week. Let's see where we're going to go. Battle of Tuanon. Tuanon comes to primetime, Trey. It is going to be Tua Tagovailoa against Justin Herbert on Sunday Night Football. Trey, this we mentioned it at the very top of our show. This is the matchup. But what's fascinating to me about this is that this is the matchup that both fan bases have been arguing about for 3 years. But what's even more fascinating is this is a fan base. This is a matchup that the Miami Dolphins fan base internally has been fighting with each other.
Yep.
And just about anybody else who says anything about Tua in the world. Give us your thoughts on this matchup on Sunday Night Football.
Dolphins Twitter is a weird place, man.
Oh, boy.
It is a weird place.
It's a party.
Well, it's a party for some. It's also a funeral, a wake,
a prison,
a firing, prison, a retirement ceremony, a swatting, a catfish. It's all of those things. It's all of those things. Look, at the end of the day, for me, Brett, we talk about this as a quarterback matchup. I don't think the quarterbacks are going to determine this one way or the other. I think it's the other side of the ball. You know, we talked about the Dolphins. They've given up 27 points in six straight road games. Only the 21st team in NFL history to do that. The splits between what they do on the road and on the home is incredible. And, you know, the Chargers have been just riddled by injuries. If the Chargers didn't have bad luck, they've had no luck, right?
Yeah.
J.C. Jackson out for the
year. Story of their franchise career.
Exactly. Bosa's not there. So there's just, I mean, the battle and the look of Tua and the things he's doing with Tyreek and Jalen and Gesicki and all this stuff is great. And Herbert, who every week makes some unbelievable throw that makes you go, wow, like who else can make those throws? It's going to come down to the other side of the ball in this. Which defense is going to come up with the stops needed? Which defense can do what San Francisco did? San Francisco, I mean, they gave up that huge play on the first play from scrimmage, maybe the best play design I've seen all year on that long touchdown. And then the Niners said, yeah, do it again. Try. Good luck. Right. And they didn't. So, you know, that to me, it's all about the other side of the ball. All about the other side of the ball.
You mentioned it with Arif here. You know, Herbert very quickly in his time, his 3 years in the league, we talk about him as a potentially, if not definitely, a top five quarterback. And Tua's path to stardom didn't happen over 3 years. It happened almost instantly once Mike McDaniel got there. The great thing for me about Underdog is you get to take these hypothetical matchups, which you're so good at reminding us, like on the field, they're not playing each other. This isn't actually Tua versus Herbert, but we do get to do that in these fantasy football matchups. And the thing that is interesting about that 49ers game, Trey, the Dolphins are second in the league in points per minute in terms of possession time. And they only had the ball for 19 minutes against the 49ers, and they still put up 17 points. They can put up points in a hurry. You just got to keep the ball away from them. And Tua is second in the league behind Dak Prescott in that measurement as well. This is a game where I still come out thinking that Justin Herbert is the better talent. He's the better quarterback, but I think Tua is going to outperform him in this game. Is that a fair statement to come completely away with?
Look, if you're building a quarterback, do you want him to be 6 feet or 6'5"?
Yeah, right.
It's a no-brainer to me. Give me the tall guy, you know? Give me the tall guy. I mean, Tua said it earlier this year, you know, I can't see you sometimes behind the offensive line. I mean, he said it, he still put together an unbelievable season. He's just admitting the physical limitations that he has, much in the same way we talked about them with Baker Mayfield. So, you know, all things being said, I think Justin Herbert would do really well if Jalen Waddle was on one side for the entire season and Tyreek Hill was on the other side. I'm not taking anything away from Keenan Allen or Mike Williams, but they've been in and out of the lineup, and they're good receivers. Those two are insane receivers, okay? So, yeah, I think that, I like Justin Herbert as a quarterback long-term more, but I sure as hell like the weapons that Tua has to throw to a hell of a lot more.
Yeah, and look, this is, again, not saying that one is bad, one is good. They're both good, but there's a physical talent that Justin Herbert has, and it makes you wonder, what would Justin Herbert be doing if Mike McDaniels or anyone in the Shanahan tree was coaching him and not what we've seen some of these late-game blunders, to put it lightly, my opinion, from Brandon Staley. You know, how much is coaching impacting? We're going to talk about Justin Herbert the way that people talk about Dan Fouts and Dan Marino. Amazing physical talents who couldn't win the big one. And how much is coaching playing into that early on for Justin Herbert?
A lot, in my opinion. Not only Staley, but who was there before him, you know? So a lot. The easy answer is a lot.
Yeah. Well, we will see how this matchup turns out. Again, it's Tua Tagovailoa and Justin Herbert on Sunday Night Football in our Underdog Fantasy Super Smash quarterback matchup of the week. Again, I wrote an article dedicated to this matchup specifically on how to capitalize on what Underdog is offering in their pick'em rosters. We have a great offer for you from Underdog as well. Again, download the app. Get a free $100 deposit bonus when you use promo code PFN at sign up. Before you place those plays on Underdog, make sure you read my article for Sunday Night Football. See what I think is going to happen using my sports betting model. I got some interesting theories, and I'll just give you the hint that I gave before. I think Tua is going to outperform Justin Herbert even if the Dolphins lose. So we'll see what happens. Trey, man, this was our first show with you on the West Coast or in the Western area of the country. Yep. And you are there, I think, now through the rest of forever until what, after the draft?
I'll be not on the Beast Coast until well after the draft.
Yeah. Well, I can't wait to hear about that when I get home, Beast Coast. So on that note, Trey, can't wait to chop it up with you again next week, my friend. Always a great time. And we'll be here next Wednesday, 8 Eastern, 5 Pacific. We'll see you then.
All right. See you then.